always wanted that to be done, and he said that he'd like that to become as widely spread as Life magazine or Time or any of these big magazines. That was his ambition. So when he came to America, then one of the first things that he did was hand over the Back to Godhead magazine, responsibility for that, to his disciples. And I think by 67 they were regularly producing Back to Godhead in a kind of just cyclist styled, like you know, not exactly printed, but there's a machine, an old machine that they used to have. It looks something like a Xerox machine, the finished product of it. So they were cyclist styling and stapling the pages together and then going out and selling them on the street. And Prabhupada was very pleased with that, and he told his disciples, you just write whatever realizations you have, then you write that down, that's all. And gradually he trained them up how to present the philosophy through the written medium. So Back to Godhead became very popular, and by 1976, when I was traveling with Prabhupada, we had gone to New York for the New York Ratha Yatra in July. That was kind of like the culmination of that year's Western tour for Srila Prabhupada. And so it was returning to New York exactly 10 years after he'd started the movement there. And they actually, the BBT printed for that 1 month, it was a Ratha Yatra special, 1 million copies of Back to Godhead. And they were all distributed as well. They were regularly doing 800,000, 900,000, according to how many the temples were ordering. And that was, I think, the first edition that they actually hit the million mark. So you can imagine that Prabhupada was extremely pleased with that. There'll be a bit more about Back to Godhead in a while. But first of all, we'll look at some other writings, because yesterday we had left off when we were talking about preaching against material science. And, of course, one of the books that was produced by one of Prabhupada's disciples during his time was a book called The Scientific Basis for Krishna Consciousness, which was written by Swarup Damodar Das, who is now Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj. And Prabhupada was very pleased with that. He used to promote that book himself at his pandals sometimes. So, Scientific Basis for Krishna Consciousness. Srila Prabhupada highly praised his disciple, Swarup Damodar, for writing the book, The Scientific Basis for Krishna Consciousness. He was telling one of his guests, Dr. Swarup Damodar, PhD, you have read that book? It is first class. The scientist, so-called scientist, unless he is insane, he cannot say that there is no God. He has written so nicely. So there was as a result of some of the work that Swarup Damodar was doing, on June the 15th in 1976, Prabhupada was in Detroit, and he got some information from South Africa. There was a report that came from the Yatra there. One of those was about an application that Swarup Damodar had put in for a post at a university in South Africa. So as far as the university posting was concerned, Srila Prabhupada was very positive about the fact that his disciple was now on the short list. So he put in an application, they shortlisted it to three persons, and Swarup Damodar was one of them. So Prabhupada said, Swarup Damodar must be the best candidate. Otherwise, what will they know about it? All of the PhDs, they are simply rubber-stamped. Actually, they have no knowledge. But Swarup Damodar has solid knowledge. He has learned from us. And therefore, he is writing all these books. He has rejected his so-called scientific knowledge. He has completely understood that so-called scientific knowledge is bogus. It has no solid background. So now he is writing books on this. So again, Prabhupada, very enthusiastic for that science writing. And a month later, when we were in Washington, D.C., July the 7th, Prabhupada had actually gone also to Baltimore, which is about an hour's drive from Washington, to see the Gaudiya deities there. So whilst he was there, he stayed for breakfast, and then he had a meeting with some of the devotees from what was then the newly formed Bhaktivedanta Institute. So I think in about 75, some circular had gone around the movement that anybody with a degree of any kind, they should contact Bhakti Swarup Damodar and Ravindra Swarup and others, because they wanted to form this Bhaktivedanta Institute, and that was to be the scientific branch of Krishna consciousness movement that would challenge the material scientists in their own arena. So the founding members of that, I think, were Ravindra Swarup, Sataputta Prabhu, Swarup Damodar, a devotee called Madhava Das, and a couple of others. So in Washington, whilst Prabhupada was there, because Rupanuga was kind of like the GBC overseeing that, and his base was Washington. So all the members of the Institute, they came to visit with Srila Prabhupada, and they had several meetings with him to discuss about the Institute. So the members of the Institute were present for the interview, and they tarried for a few minutes afterwards to finalize a few things. Swarup Damodar indicated that they would like to start out their preaching by producing a book and a journal. That will be our initial phase, and our feeling is now this institute, at the beginning, it is some sort of research institute that we are doing right now, writing something, collecting some information from other sources. So it looks to me like it will be research orientated. No, Prabhupada said, one thing is research means again that mental speculation. But our research is different though, Swarup Damodar said. No, people will understand that it is another type of mental speculation, Prabhupada told him. But ours is not that. We take it as absolute truth. In other words, no, there's no research. Prabhupada hated the word research because it indicates that you don't know, you know, what the end result is and you're still looking. So he said there's no question of research in Krishna consciousness. We know what the absolute truth is. That's it. So how to convince them, he said. Rupanuga assured him that they did not intend to advertise themselves as a research institute. Research, Prabhupada said, means that it is not known. You are trying to find out. But our, Krishna's position is not like that. It is already known. Srila Prabhupada is well aware of the power of words. His concern for conveying the proper understanding, even with a simple phrase, showed when they asked about the title for the journal. Rupanuga had traveled back from Baltimore with Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada had given the name Savigyanam for this journal. So they had discussed what the actual meaning of Savigyanam was, and Prabhupada gave it as in scientific knowledge. But Swarup Damodar wondered about the word in. Rupanuga asked Srila Prabhupada, I was wondering if this sa, does that mean in? No, Prabhupada said, sa means with. It sounded not quite right to Rupanuga. With scientific. Would it be improper to say Vijnana only? I was thinking in terms of making the title as short as possible. But Prabhupada liked the full title. Savijnanam is more important, he said. Vijnanam means theoretical, and Savijnanam means practical. So in parentheses we write, in scientific knowledge, Swarup Damodar asks, that you can say, or you can write spiritual science, Prabhupada suggested, and then immediately corrected himself. No, that will not ring for them. They will not understand spiritual science. Swarup Damodar made a couple of suggestions. How about perfect science or complete science? So Prabhupada left it to them to decide the exact phrase. But Savijnanam, anyway, that was the Sanskrit title. And for a while they did actually produce that journal. It was a quarterly, every 3 months. Then they would produce different articles that members of the BI had worked on, aiming at different parts or disciplines of material science. So there was another man that turned up in Washington who Prabhupada immediately wanted to engage in this scientific preaching. His name was Dr. Dinesh Sharma. So again, the same day, July 7th, after Prabhupada's darshan, he went out onto the back porch for a while to take a little prasadam and milk and to relax in the cool night air. This was in the evening. Dr. Dinesh Sharma spent a few minutes with him. He has been attending the morning Bhagavatam class and is very enthusiastic to help with the BI. He is highly educated, having 4 doctorates in chemistry, biochemistry, clinical endocrinology, and he has 1 as a fellow of the Royal Institute of Chemistry in London. 4 PhDs this guy had. It's like a professional student. He has a law degree as well and is involved with computer information and control engineering. He told Prabhupada how he had been a hardcore Vedantist and a follower of various Mayavadi institutions. Then, once while he was in an ashram in Calcutta, he had cried out to God, "Please help me find the path again." Almost immediately afterwards, he had met the ISKCON devotees, and his heart has been changed by chanting Hare Krishna. He said that once he was meditating in Haridwar, his birthplace. "All the time, your face was appearing behind the Ganges, and it was a very strange phenomena," he told Srila Prabhupada. He was amazed that 2 days ago, he had been meditating on 5 verses of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, and he had come to the temple to ask Srila Prabhupada to explain them. But during the course of the evening's discussion, without any prompting, Srila Prabhupada had spoken on 4 of the verses. Prabhupada was very pleased to obtain the services of such a highly qualified person. He called Swarup Damodar Prabhu in and advised him to engage Dr. Sharma as fully as possible in writing for the new journal and helping with other Bhaktivedanta Institute projects. So I don't know what happened to Dr. Sharma. I think he was briefly involved, but what happened to him after that, I have no idea. So anyway, that's a little bit about the hopes that Prabhupada had for preaching against material science. He was doing it himself, as he said. We are writing books against them. And at the same time, he was very eager to engage any of his disciples that had any qualification at all for doing this kind of writing. Although there was a morning walk in December of 1975, when a devotee, Alanath Prabhu from Germany, he had come to Vrindavan and he was on the morning walk. And, you know, as Prabhupada did practically every day, he was speaking against material science. So at one point, Alanath mentioned that in Sweden they were going to produce a special magazine to preach against the scientists. So then Prabhupada immediately stopped and he said, "No, don't do that unless you are very expert." He wanted that preaching, but he said, "Unless you are very expert, then you will look very foolish if you say the wrong things." So he said, "I can do, because I know what is the science." But he said, "Unless you know it, then don't attempt this." So, but these men, Prabhupada was keen because they were scientists. And I remember in 1977, when Srila Prabhupada got very sick at the Mayapur festival, he came down for the greeting of the deities, and then he was so sick that actually he couldn't give class, and he had a couple of the GBC speak instead. Then he went back up to his room, and he told me, he said, "Now nobody should come." He immediately went to take rest, but he said, "Call Swarup Damodar." And then Swarup Damodar came up and Prabhupada preached to him for a half hour about defeating the material scientists. And he told him, he said, "Actually, I wanted to do this, but," he said, I don't know the language and I'm not trained in that discipline." He said, "Therefore, Krishna sent you to me so that you can do this." So even though he was so sick, he didn't want to see anybody, but still he called up his scientist disciple to tell him to, you know, push on this business of defeating the material scientists. So, Rupanuga and the BTG. So, as I mentioned a little bit about the BTG before, it became a little bit of a controversy, actually, which direction the BTG was heading in 1976. There was some disagreements with the editors about what articles they should print in the BTG and what they should leave out. So Rupanuga, being the GBC of the Bhaktivedanta Institute, he was a little upset with the editors of the BTG. On September 23rd, 1976, he sent a letter to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. So about himself, Rupanuga said that he has teamed up with Arjun Malik, a psychologist from the University of Madras, who met Srila Prabhupada in July in New York. Rupanuga is also writing, and in this context he had a complaint. I'm working on one article for the journal, means Savigyanam, entitled A Morphology of Consciousness. In this connection, we feel that the editorial policy of the BTG is narrow-minded regarding scientific articles. Damodar Prabhu, an editor on the BTG staff, that's not Swarup Damodar, this is another Damodar, and Jayadvaita Das also agree with this opinion. A case in point is the article recently published by the scientists in BTG, which was originally rejected and then was later printed only because Your Divine Grace requested it. Other articles from Rabindra Swarup Prabhu have been rejected, and more recently one by myself and another by Amarendra Prabhu, the president of Gainesville, who is one of our best preachers and a graduate in journalism. The policy, according to Damodar, is for BTG to publish articles of general interest rather than those of specific interest, like more scientific or scholarly articles. In my opinion, there could be a scientific-type article from different fields in every issue of BTG, because many readers of the BTG are intelligent. Of course, the most scientific or scholarly articles, or more technical articles, can be for the journal, but those who are qualified should have a chance to publish in the BTG. I know, for example, that Amarendra worked on his article for months, and then he received a letter in reply that he should read a book on writing style. He worked for months on this article, and then they wrote back and said, you should learn how to write. Anyway, I'm bringing this to your attention because it has become a familiar observation by the more senior members of our society. Prabhupada heard the report with interest. He was concerned about Rupanuga's dissatisfaction with BTG, especially in view of the recent complaint by Samati Mararaji. So that was another type of complaint that had come in, and I'll mention that in a minute. But Samati Mararaji, of course, was the lady that had given Prabhupada his free passage on the Jaladuta to America. So she was very influential, and she had written about a complaint, but that we'll talk about that soon. So Prabhupada wrote back, regarding the editorial policy of BTG, if the editorial board is not expert enough, they should be changed. Dr. Obiel Kapoor, that's Prabhupada's godbrother, has put in a similar complaint. Yes, scientific articles must be published when sent by our men. I cannot see every article, but some of you should examine why nice articles are being rejected. See if the board can be changed. If experienced editors are not there, then it will be an unpopular magazine. These things are to be seen to immediately by the GBC. The board should be judged immediately and changed if required. So, Prabhupada was very clear about what he wanted, even if his editors weren't. So, again, talking about, you know, this being a very specialized field, on February 11th, 1976, we were in Mayapur. So Swarup Damodar also sent a letter from America. He is unable to leave for at least 6 months due to a pending immigration visa application. so he will not be able to attend the programs that have been planned for early April in Manipur, his home state. He is busy setting up programs planned for the Bhaktivedanta Institute for preaching in the scientific field in colleges and universities. He, Rupanuga, Madhava, Sadaputa, Rabindra Swarup, and Shubhananda Prabhus are the core members of the institute. He wanted to know if he could start up a Sankirtan party to fund a proposed college lecture program in the fall. Prabhupada discussed the idea with Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who suggested that since his Radha Damodar traveling Sankirtan party is already collecting and has a very solid university preaching program, the institute members could travel on their buses. This would solve their funding problems and guarantee many opportunities for the type of preaching that they want to do. Prabhupada liked the idea and he wrote back to Swarup Damodar to accept the offer. Swarup Damodar also suggested that the candidates for the title of Bhaktivedanta and Bhaktisarva Bhauma could submit a thesis on a Vaishnav topic. So when we were in Nellore in early January of 1976, Prabhupada had sent a letter out to all the temples saying that he wanted to immediately begin this program of study and awarding titles to the devotees at different levels, Bhakti Shastri, Bhaktivedanta, Bhakti Sarva Bhauma, like that, Bhakti Bhai Bhava, Bhakti Sarva Bhauma. And he gave the books that had to be studied, and this is now, you know, that was the basis of the, what we have now is the Bhakti Shastri course. Bhakti Shastri course is the first one, then there's supposed to be more, Bhaktivedanta and Bhakti Bhai Bhava, like this, according to the books that you're studying. So Swarup Damodar was responding to that. He was very happy to see that Prabhupada wanted to introduce that system. And he suggested that for the higher titles, then the devotees could submit a thesis on a Vaishnav topic, just as they do in the universities, and they award them PhD like that. So some of these scholarly essays, he said, could then be published into small books, because that's something that they do in the university system very often. Somebody writes his thesis and then he has it published in a book and that's distributed by the university. So Prabhupada liked the idea and he told him, regarding publishing books, these books can be published by you and men in your rank. Ordinary men cannot write such books. So therefore, if a book is written by one man with Bhaktivedanta or Bhaktisarva Bhauma and it is of high quality, then it may be considered by me for publishing. So Prabhupada was willing to look at that. If it was to a high standard, he would have the BBT publish that book. So that's a little bit on science. Another aspect of science, of course, material science, is that it was the basis of communist philosophy. And Prabhupada engaged another devotee in preaching against the communist materialistic scientific philosophy. That was Hari Kesh. So when I joined Srila Prabhupada's party in late November of 75, Hari Kesh had been doing kind of half of the servant's duties, but not the massage. Then when I came on as a full-time servant, he was kind of worried because he thought, now I'm losing, you know, part of my service. Maybe I'll, you know, be told to leave the party or something. But Prabhupada immediately engaged him in a new service, and that service was writing. So on December the 6th, 1975, we were in Vrindavan. Prabhupada has given Hari Kesh a new service. He wants him to write an essay entitled Experimental Knowledge, explaining the defects of modern science and presenting the scientific basis of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada has been personally coaching him, calling him in regularly to discuss points of logic. He told Hari Kesh not to criticize modern science as such, but the misuse of it. Science should not be used as a tool to propagate atheistic theories, and false claims must be exposed. Material scientists are challenging God, and now Prabhupada, as God's servant and representative, is challenging them. Inventions you can take credit for, he said, but why claim to be God? So he was very keen on this, and practically every day he was calling him in, and they would discuss different points of contention. And, he was telling him to issue challenges. Can you make an egg? That was one of Prabhupada's favorite challenges. Can you make an egg? Well, a chicken can make an egg, so a chicken is better than you. You give your PhD to the chicken. Like this. So, it's very nice. So on December 27th, 1975, we were in a place called Sanand in Gujarat. Prabhupada had gone there to do a series of pandals. So Prabhupada considers Hari Kesha's writing assignment important enough that he has given him permission to miss some of the programs so that he can work on it. Normally, if Prabhupada was speaking, he would insist that all the members of his party had to attend. Even on the morning walks, if one of the servants wasn't there, Prabhupada would ask, "Where is he?" Usually it was Pradyumna. He was always missing the walks. But Prabhupada insisted that we had to attend the walks. We had to be there for Bhagavatam class. And if there were any pandal programs, we had to be there. Even if Prabhupada was speaking in Hindi or Bengali, he still expected that his English-speaking disciples had to attend, because the sound vibration is still spiritual, even if you don't understand the language. So he would insist you have to be there. But on this occasion, he gave Hari Kesha permission not to attend, because he considered that the work he was doing on this booklet was very important. Hari Kesha is applying himself very seriously to the task, and Prabhupada frequently calls on him to discuss various arguments. Today, he even had him come during his massage to discuss. Prabhupada decided to take his massage up on the roof, as it was warm and sunny. Being the highest building in the district, it offers a good view for miles around, with a gentle breeze carrying the distinct redolence of the tobacco plants. So that area, they were growing cash crops, which was another thing that Prabhupada criticized. They were growing tobacco plants. And we were staying at the house of the king of Sanand. Because, king implies something very big and majestic. But he was the king of, a small village of about 20,000 people. But he had the biggest house in the town. So we were staying there. We were up on the roof there. So Hari Kesha came up carrying the tape recorder. He has recently obtained a small book explaining Leninist philosophy, and using it as a basis, he and Prabhupada engaged in a lengthy discussion. Prabhupada brilliantly exposed the defects in the communist ideology, showing how to defeat them at their own game of thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. So there was a long discussion. Then, towards the end, Hari Kesha suggested that what Prabhupada had just spoken could be written as a Back to Godhead article. So Prabhupada told him to write it. Hari Kesha said, "You so completely destroy the opposition, it's very hard to say anything more." Prabhupada agreed, but he challenged further. "Yes, that you have to prove. You can eulogize your Guru Maharaj, but you have to learn it and face the public and be strong to defend yourself. That is success, not by praising your Guru Maharaj. You'll praise your Guru Maharaj, that is not very difficult. But be victorious to the opposing elements, then you'll praise your Guru Maharaj the best. At home you can praise your Guru Maharaj, and Guru Maharaj may be satisfied. Oh, my disciples are praising me. So that is good, respectful, that is a qualification. But you have to fight, then your Guru Maharaj will be glorified." These discussions have been going on for weeks, but Prabhupada continues to prod Hari Kesha for further materialistic viewpoints, which he then promptly defeats. He is determined to challenge and destroy every philosophical obstacle to Lord Chaitanya's mission. He is always visibly inspired by such debate. At the same time, Prabhupada is making it clear that he wants to train as many men as possible to take up this task of saving the world. He concluded the discussion by asking Hari Kesha to produce a small pamphlet on the subject, urging him to print it even in Russian. "Oh, in Russian," Hari Kesha said. Yes, Prabhupada said, they are the greatest atheists. Wow, a dialectic spiritualism pamphlet in Russian. That's big, Russian. So at that time, there was no instruction from Prabhupada for Hare Krishna to come to Eastern Europe. It had not been discussed, simply the philosophy. And he was telling him to write to defeat, you know, Marxism, Leninist philosophy. And he even told him, you make this pamphlet in Russian language. And about a month later, when Hare Krishna took sannyas in early February, he was actually sent back to America. He wasn't sent to Europe. He was to go and join the Radha Damodar buses and then, you know, tour around with them. But on the way through, he had got a stopover in London. And then as soon as he arrived in London, this devotee Alanath was there, and he had this invitation to go to Hungary to a yoga club there. So he said, why don't you come with me and, you know, let's go and preach there. So then, quite by seeming chance, he was diverted from America to go into Eastern Europe. And then after he wrote this very ecstatic report to Srila Prabhupada of that, you know, visit there to this yoga club in Hungary, then Prabhupada told him, yes, stay in Europe now and just preach there. So that was it. Then that became his whole service, preaching in the communist countries of Europe, as well as Germany, of course. But it was only until after that then I realized that all this training that Prabhupada had given him for writing against the communist philosophy, now Krishna was putting that to use, although Prabhupada had never specifically mentioned it. It's interesting. So June 22nd, 1976, we were in New Brindavan in America. And Prabhupada had gotten some letters. So there was one about Ravanari. Ravanari was an Arab devotee who had formerly been a member of the PLO, which at that time was the Palestinian Liberation Organization, Arafat and his mob. They were real fanatics. So somewhere or another, this boy, by Krishna's mercy, became a devotee. So he was very keen to write Bhakti commentaries, verse for verse, on the Koran, what he called the Vedic Koran. He said that the book in its pure form is Radha Krishna conscious. He also proposed to translate into Arabic the paper on communism that Hare Keshe had written while he was still with Prabhupada earlier in the year. So that was that paper. Ravanari felt that it would be well received in Egypt, where the president of the country is said to be looking for such material. Finally, Hare Keshe was giving a report about Ravanari. Finally, Hare Keshe wanted to know if he should involve himself in smuggling books into the communist countries. He asked Prabhupada if he felt whether this was foolish or necessary. Although he kept his reply short and to the point, Srila Prabhupada was deeply satisfied to hear about their preaching efforts and the risks that they have to undergo for both his and Krishna's sake. He answered Hare Krishna's questions point by point. There is no need to give a commentary on the Koran. There is no other religion in the world in truth than this Bhagavad Dharma. However, something is better than nothing. The communism book that you have written, they say that there are some words there that may be irritating to the communists. We have just finished a book which Hayagriva is editing at present. It is called Dialectic Spiritualism. And within that book, your comments can be added, if need be, for preaching in the Eastern European countries. So Prabhupada had a slight change of plan. After, you know, spending a month and a half discussing all the points about scientific atheism and telling Hare Krishna to write this article and put it in Russian. Then just after that, Gopal Krishna Prabhu, he was a Prabhu at that time, now he's a Maharaj, he was sent by Srila Prabhupada to Russia. He was one of the first, you know, devotees to go there. And he had gone there as a book salesman for the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. So he went in business suit and tie, and, you know, because he was Indian, it was easy for him to get into Russia because India had close ties with them. So he went in and he started selling Prabhupada's books in all the universities. and he met with this Professor Kotovsky, who was not that favorable, but anyway, he was going around and he was getting a good response. So then there was a concern that then if Hari Kesh's article, which was very, you know, attacking on the communists, if that was printed in BTG, then that might, you know, have a comeback on the efforts to sell Prabhupada's books in the universities there. So then Prabhupada said, all right, then don't publish it. So again, he's now giving the same advice to Hari Kesh here. Don't sell it in Egypt even, you know, because it may get back to the communists and it may spoil the other preaching that's going on. So he was willing to make adjustments wherever necessary according to how situations developed. Prabhupada was very dynamic in that respect. It's not like, you know, everything that he said. You know, sometimes we think that when the guru speaks, that's it. You know, it's fixed in stone. But it's not always like that. And especially in the application of devotional life and in the field of preaching. You know, it can be very dynamic and you can make so many adjustments according to the situation. So, let's see. Again, something more on Lenin. So, July 27th, 1976, Hari Kesh had just come back on the party, actually, as Prabhupada's secretary. And we had arrived in London from New York. So, he explained that even if people criticize us that Krishna cannot be seen, Prabhupada was saying, we can reverse that argument. Prabhupada said, you do not see Lenin. Why you are worshipping? Is Lenin present before you? So why are you worshipping? You'll see. You have got in Moscow, every street corner, a big picture. If somebody argues, where is Lenin? Why are you worshipping? You cannot see Lenin. Because they say, where is your Krishna? You're worshipping a statue. So we can say the same thing. Where is your Lenin? The statue it is? In the airport, street crossing, and everywhere there is his picture. And they go to worship Lenin's tomb every day. Many other fools also go there, tourists, to that red square. They also tried in India for Nehru's tomb and for Gandhi's tomb. So in the beginning there was a little crowd, but now nobody goes. But Vrindavan, Govindaji's temple, Krishna Balaram temple, without any invitation, such a big crowd. So this is culture. Bhagavan added, well, Marx, he has written only one little book, and you have written so many books. What does he know, Prabhupada scoffed, that he'll write? He can bluff people, that's all. Here is Vyasadev, Vidvan, and he quoted the Srimad Bhagavatam. Hari Kesh read the translation. The material miseries of the living entity, which is superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the Supreme Truth. So, here is Vidvan, Prabhupada said, and there is a rascal, Lenin. He does not know how people will be helped. So he was writing, but he actually didn't know what the real welfare of people was. So that's about the scientists and scientific preaching. I have here that little quote about Prabhupada saying that you must be expert, though, if you want to do that. I may as well read that now it's here. That was on December the 8th, 1975 in Vrindavan. Despite his often humorous critiques and sometimes general condemnations of modern materialistic scientists, Prabhupada cautioned us that any attempt to preach on a scientific basis must be done expertly. When Alanath, a European devotee, told him of plans to publish a magazine in Swedish with articles challenging material scientists, Prabhupada warned him, "Don't write anything nonsense. It must be very solid. Otherwise, you'll be laughing stock. One must be confident before challenging others. In all stages, he must be able to defend himself from the opposing elements. Then such a challenge is all right. We are confident that this soul cannot be manufactured by any material combination. Therefore, we can challenge, and we can defend ourselves on any stage." And that was a fact. I mean, I saw sometimes scientists would come and, you know, see Srila Prabhupada and discuss with him, and he would immediately defeat them. Big PhDs and scholars. But as soon as they came before Srila Prabhupada, within a few minutes, he would immediately gauge what the flaws were and the limitations of their arguments, and then expose them. And then they would have to sit down and be quiet and just listen to Srila Prabhupada. Every time. Nobody could defeat Srila Prabhupada. He was so expert. So, another person that Prabhupada engaged in writing was Gogovinda Maharaj. September 6, 1976, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. He had, the month before, received a copy of a small book that Gogovinda Maharaj had translated into Urian. So he got a letter now from Gogovinda Maharaj. And in his reply, Prabhupada encouraged him to continue and even glorified his isolation as part of our tradition. Gogovinda Maharaj at that time was living on this bare plot of land on the outskirts of Bhubaneswar. And there was nothing there. He didn't have any electricity. He had no running water. He was living in a little hut, brick and thatched roof, and by himself. I think maybe he just had like one helper that would come now and again. Otherwise, he was just living by himself and just, you know, translating. So he had written to Prabhupada saying, you know, can you send somebody to give me some help here? I'm all alone and there's no facilities. So Prabhupada was encouraging him, no, this isolation is actually part of our tradition. Preaching actually done alone, that is the experience that we get from the previous acharyas. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling alone, and with great difficulty, his associates induced him to accept one assistant. He gave practical reasons why it was not possible to send any more men. So far foreign devotees are concerned, I can bring immediately 500 devotees from foreign countries, but the government will not allow them to stay. If any devotee comes, he has to go back again after 3 months or 6 months at 10,000 rupees expenditure. Still, I am struggling, and whenever possible, I am bringing foreign devotees to preach in India. And as you say, the Indians are cheaters, although not all of them. So, Gogovinda Maharaj was complaining, I have no foreign devotees to help me, and what Indians are coming, they're all cheaters. They all want to take advantage of me. So he wasn't very happy. So Prabhupada said, yes, I agree with you, but not everyone is like that. The majority who come and join us, it has been experienced, they are not sincere. So under the circumstances, what can be done? I do not know. But one hope is that you are publishing in the written language, and it has been distributed, and your writing is approved by me. So if you concentrate on these literature printing matters and try to distribute as far as possible, that is our success. You can construct immediately a nice temple there, but you say there is no devotees. So how the temple management will be executed? This is the problem. So you are conversant in the local language. If you bring some sincere souls to join you by preaching, then it will be successful. Just like in Europe and America, I went single-handedly, and by preaching work, the boys responded, and therefore we can see some light of success. Unfortunately, in India, this spirit is lacking. In India, generally, young men are after money and women. This is natural. They have no sacrificing spirit, and that is the difference. So, that was the state in 75-76 in India. Very difficult to get anybody to join there. Prabhupada said that it was because they were too attached to their families. You know, the family life in India is very strong. He said, that's actually one of the advantages of you Westerners, he said. You have no attachment for family. He said, all of you are simply wandering as hippies, like that. He said, of course, if you remain hippies, then that's, you know, bad. But if you become Krishna conscious, then that lack of attachment for the family is a good asset. So another devotee, of course, that Prabhupada had engaged right from the very beginning of the movement was Sasrup Das Goswami. On June the 13th, 1976, we were in Detroit. Prabhupada sent for Sasrup Maharaj late in the evening at about 10 o'clock. He suggested that Maharaj write a book on the theme that all endeavor is a failure without Krishna. Their discussion lasted nearly an hour. Satsarup Maharaj has already completed his work on a new book for use in colleges called Readings in Vedic Literature, and that is expected to come out later this year. So that was one that was approved by Prabhupada. It was a summary of, you know, different aspects of Vedic culture and religion. And it contained just the verses of the Bhagavad Gita and the Sri Upanishad. And it was called Readings in Vedic Literature. Prabhupada liked that. And that was actually sold as a school textbook in many universities. So Prabhupada printed that, the BBT printed that. And now he called him in and told him, write a book explaining how every endeavor is a failure unless it is connected with Krishna. And later on, Prabhupada actually told Bhagavan Das in Europe to write a book explaining how every problem can be solved by Krishna consciousness. So, I think Satsarup Maharaj did eventually come out with a small book along these lines, but it wasn't very substantial. Later on, Satsarup actually came to India to become Prabhupada's secretary for the month of January, or January-February. On 25th and 26th of January, we actually visited Jagannath Puri. We'd been in Bhubaneswar, and then we went to Puri for 2 days. So while we were in Jagannath Puri, Prabhupada called Satsarup and Pradyumna Prabhu, and he discussed with them for about half an hour about other projects that he wanted them to work on. And he said that there are many books, actually, that I would like to have translated and commentary put on, but I have no time to do that because I'm doing the Bhagavatam. So he gave them a list, Padma Purana, Vishnu Purana, several other of the Upanishads, and I think some of the Six Goswami's works. And he said that Pradyumna should do the translation from the Sanskrit, and then Satsarup should do the English editing and add commentary when needed in English. So that was, you know, again, another project for Satsarup. There was another person that joined in 1976 who Prabhupada gave some instructions for writing. He was a Catholic priest. So his name was Eugene Stansky. And he had seen Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles. He'd just joined. He was about in his mid-50s, probably. So he was very old compared to the rest of us. I mean, practically speaking, in 1976, there were no devotees that were over 30 years old. Most of us were, you know, between 17 and 25. I was 25 when I was traveling with Prabhupada. And, you know, the oldest members of the movement were probably people like Kirtananda. He might have been about 34 at that time. Or Bhavananda, 36, something like that. But this man joined, he was in his 50s. So he was a little unusual for somebody to join like that. He'd been a Catholic priest. So he saw Prabhupada in Los Angeles. And then a week later, we were in Detroit. So he turned up in Detroit, and Prabhupada gave him another darshan. So he had some questions to ask, and he wanted Prabhupada's approval for a writing project that he was planning. He said that he was very happy about traveling with Satsarup Maharaj's party. So Satsarup Maharaj was in charge of the library party at that time, and he had a college preaching program as well. And he had one of these recreational vehicles that they converted into like a traveling temple. So Eugene had joined that party. Eugene asked if he could keep a daily log of his activities for the year with the aim of writing a book explaining the transition from Roman Catholic priesthood to Krishna consciousness. It would be written, he told Prabhupada, for the college student with the basis of solid philosophical principles rather than mere sentiment. I think this would open up the door to all of the colleges and universities across the country, he said. Prabhupada was enthusiastic. Eugene has a PhD and has joined us not out of sentiment or whim, but by solidly understanding the philosophy. The chance to penetrate the universities appealed to Srila Prabhupada, and he mentioned recent successes in Hamburg, where his books have been accepted as texts for learning Sanskrit. He encouraged Eugene to do it. "So you have kindly come to us. You study our philosophy very minutely, and then try to do something for the suffering humanity. The saintly persons, at least in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, they are not meant for idle life. They are always busy for the welfare of the whole human society. This is the sign of a saintly person." So I don't know whether Eugene ever managed to get that book out. I did hear later on that he had left because he found it too difficult, you know, living in the kind of brahmachari situation. Again, he was an older man, and I think it was probably a bit too austere for him. So I don't know what happened to him. Some other writing, which I don't have any example of here, but I put it down as a note, was that in 1977, there was another challenge against the scientists. I should have added this before. There was Hansidutta had gone down to Sri Lanka. What was that? Hansidutta had gone down to preach in Sri Lanka, and there was this man called Dr. Cavour. So he had written to the newspapers about the sentimental Hare Krishnas, you know, singing and dancing, and he was promoting science. So they had gotten into a debate with this man in the newspapers, because the local newspaper loved it because it was controversy and it would sell more, you know, papers. But they were actually giving like full featured articles to the first to the devotees and then to Dr. Cavour. And they were replying back and forth, you know, criticizing each other. And the devotees were challenging, you know, Dr. Cavour. He was glorifying material science and all the advancements of material science and saying, we don't need God, you know, because we've already invented so many new elements. I remember he gave a list of 10 so-called elements that he claimed scientists had invented, you know, for improving, you know, on material nature. So the devotees had challenged Dr. Cavour to a public debate, and they hired a hall, and it was in all the newspapers that Dr. Cavour and the Hare Krishna devotees were going to have this debate. But then when it came to the actual day, then Dr. Cavour pulled out. He didn't go. And then he claimed that he'd been sick, so he couldn't go. So in the newspapers the next day, then it said something like, Cavour flummoxed. Means defeated. You know, the Hare Krishnas came out on top. So the devotees had sent, you know, this series of articles to Srila Prabhupada when he was in Vrindavan in May of and June of 77, and he was very, very pleased with the whole thing. And that debate actually was included in that book, Life Comes From Life. It's in the tail end section of that. So that was another where Prabhupada, you know, encouraged the devotees to go out and actively challenge the scientists, you know, defeat them at their own game, and where we had actually come out on top. So he was really happy about that. So anyway, Prabhupada encouraged his disciples to write, but at the same time, you know, he expected us to be very careful as well, as he said in the science thing, unless you know what you're doing, don't do it, otherwise you'll look foolish. So one example of writing that upset Srila Prabhupada was when we got to Mayapur in 1976 for the festival there, on February 27th, then a copy of a newspaper came, which was being produced by the devotees in Hyderabad. It was called the Hare Krishna Explosion. So generally, a few advanced copies of each issue are sent to Srila Prabhupada. Some of the sannyasis have complained about a small article that has appeared in the latest edition. Volume 21. The article was titled, Hindus Converted to Muslims. It explained how Muslims would sometimes convert Hindus into Muslims by sprinkling them with water. Being bound by a very strict caste system, then such persons were immediately ostracized from the Hindu community and forced to become Muslims. The article, which was simply a quote from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada mentioned that in one of his purports, had no explanation, nor was it related to anything else in the newspaper. They just kind of stuck it in there. So Achyutananda Swami felt that it was inflammatory, especially in view of the community tensions in Hyderabad. Hyderabad is a very big Muslim population, and there were riots there on occasion. That's like one of those flashpoints in India, just like in Gujarat they had. So Hyderabad used to be like that also. So this article was just put in there for no reason. There was no background or anything, no explanation. So Prabhupada agreed. The article was pointless, and he was upset by it. He immediately wrote a letter to Mahamsa Swami, ordering him to stop production. "You must stop circulation of this newspaper immediately. It is not being properly managed. Who is this rascal who is writing such articles? See to this immediately." So, another time when Prabhupada had to admonish his editors. This reference that I gave before about Sumati Mararaji. So there had been an article that had been printed in the Back to Godhead in 1976, and it was actually an edited version of a lecture that Prabhupada gave in London in 1973. So on August the 6th, 1976, we were in New Mayapur. Prabhupada received a letter from Sumati Mararaji, and she was complaining about this BTG article. Although he was due to depart in mid-afternoon, Prabhupada decided to answer a long letter from Sumati Mararaji, the owner of Sindhya Shipping and the patron of Srila Prabhupada's first voyage to the West. She expressed considerable dissatisfaction with a recently published article in Back to Godhead magazine, Volume 10, Number 8, which summarized a lecture that Prabhupada had given about the qualifications of a guru. In it, he referred to the exchange where Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had criticized Sri Vallabhacharya for claiming that a commentary that he had written on the Srimad Bhagavatam was actually better than that of the ancient commentator Srila Sridhar Swami. Since Sumati Mararaji is a devotee in the Vallabhacharya Sampradaya, she expressed shock and pain to read the article. She felt Srila Prabhupada's comments were provocative and highly objectionable. "I had a firm belief in your mission of spreading the message of Sri Krishna all over the world. But reading the above extract of your lecture, I was very much disappointed, since therein you attempt to portray an incorrect image of Sri Vallabhacharya based on hearsay. Time has been changing, and when we present the image of our ancient acharyas to the public today, great responsibility rests in us to preserve their greatness and not in tarnishing them. Every acharya is great in his own way, and no acharya is greater than another. Each had come to this world to perform one's duties, and every acharya has done so in the best way possible." She was disturbed enough that she said she could give wide and adverse publicity against ISKCON, but she did not feel that that would serve anyone's interest. She ended with a request that things could be amicably resolved. "I sincerely trust that your good self will take my observations in the proper perspective and spirit and publish your clarifications with a view to removing any misunderstanding which may have been created in the minds of the readers of Back to Godhead." Concerned that Sumati Mararaji not carry any misunderstandings of his statements, Srila Prabhupada sent her a lengthy reply. He began by saying that he was sorry to hear that she was agitated by the Back to Godhead article. He explained that his editors did not know the principle of satyam bruyat priyam bruyat, that in the material world only the palatable truths should be spoken and the unpalatable truths should be carefully avoided. Satyam bruyat priyam bruyat. Priyam means something that is pleasing, and satyam means the truth. So there's two principles: speaking the truth and speaking something pleasant. So Prabhupada is saying, in the material world you speak pleasant things but not the truth, because people don't like it. Nevertheless, he confirmed the fact of the incident as related in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He explained that just as she was irritated by the criticism of Vallabhacharya, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was also agitated by Vallabhacharya's criticism of Sridhar Swami, who was accepted as the original commentator of the Srimad Bhagavatam long before Lord Chaitanya's day. Perhaps you know that there is an edition of the Srimad Bhagavatam by Krishna Shankar Shastri, Abhinava Sukha Vedantacharya Sahitya Tirtha, Sri Bhagavat Sudanidhi from Ahmedabad. In his book, he has given almost all the important commentaries of the Bhagavatam as follows. 1. Sridhar Swami. 2. Vamsidhara. 3. Sri Gangashaya. 4. Srimad Viraragavacharya. 5. Srimad Vijayadvaj Tirtha. 6. Srimad Jiva Goswami. 7. Srimad Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. 8. Srimad Sukadev. 9. Goswami Sri Giridharlal from the Vallabhacharya Sampradaya. 10. Sri Bhagavat Prasadacharya, etc. This is actually the book that Prabhupada used to take his commentaries from. You'll see sometimes in Prabhupada's purports, he refers to Viraragavacharya or Vijayadvaj Tirtha or whatever. So this book was a compilation of all the important commentaries in Sanskrit on the Srimad Bhagavatam. They're called tikas. And Prabhupada used to read those tikas as well as the Bengali commentaries of his Guru Maharaj on the Bhagavatam, and then he would produce his own purports. So amongst all commentaries, Prabhupada told her, Sridhar Swami is given the first position. This parampara has existed for a very long time. Srila Prabhupada gave evidence that although this system was accepted in Lord Chaitanya's time, Sri Vallabhacharya violated it by not accepting Sridhar Swami's commentary as preeminent. I am enclosing herewith some photocopies of the important verses from the original book, Chaitanya Charitamrita, that specifically deals with the subject matter. These verses are from the Anchalila, chapter 7, entitled Lord Chaitanya Meets Vallabhabhat. I would like to draw your attention to verse 113 on page 55, where Vallabhabhat says, in my commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, he said, I have refuted the explanations of Sridhar Swami. I cannot accept his explanations. Moreover, verse 114 states, whatever Sridhar Swami reads, he explains according to the circumstances. Therefore, he is inconsistent in his explanations and cannot be accepted as an authority. Then Prabhupada goes on, Vallabhabhat's declaration certainly agitated Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Consequently, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu remarked sarcastically that he considered that anyone who did not accept the Swami, or Sridhar Swami, as an authority was a prostitute. Prabhu hasi kahi. But he smiled, and he said this jokingly because they were friends. So the word Swami also, it means controller, and it is also sometimes used by the wife to address the husband. So it was a play on words. Although this point is very controversial, see, and it was that particular point that Prabhupada had said in his lecture that was printed in the Back to Godhead, this comment that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had criticized Vallabhacharya, saying that he was a prostitute because he was not obedient to his master, Sridhar Swami. So that was put in the Back to Godhead, and that was what was agitating all the followers of the Vallabhacharya Sampradaya. So although this point is very controversial, It is not based on hearsay, as you have stated, but it is authoritatively documented by the Chaitanya Charitamrita. As you have written in a friendly spirit, I do not wish to discuss this point further. If you will kindly take a little trouble to read this chapter, Lord Chaitanya meets Vallabha Bhatt, you will understand the whole situation. Actually, Vallabha Bhatt should not have criticized Sridhar Swami, because even now, Sridhar Swami is very respected. Even authorities like Srila Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mention in their commentaries Swami Charanat, as we have learned it from the lotus feet of Sridhar Swami. So when Vallabha Bhatt criticized Sridhar Swami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu criticized Vallabha Bhatt strongly. This is a fact, but it does not mean that Vallabha Bhatt and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were inimical. Vallabha Bhatt honored Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as his superior. Sometimes Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would chastise Vallabha Bhatt, and sometimes he would favor him, because that was their relationship. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would never refuse the occasional invitations of Vallabha Bhatt. So everything will become clear if you kindly read this chapter with attention. For example, we see that two lawyers are in the courtroom and they may fight vigorously about a law point. But upon returning to the law library, they talk and embrace like friends. So you should always remember that we have no ill feelings towards Vallabha Bhattacharya. We have full respect for him, so there is no harm if these facts are discussed in the society of devotees. Devotees always humbly offer respects to everyone, but when there is a discussion on the point of Shastra, they do not observe the usual etiquette, satyam bruyat, priyam bruyat. They speak only the satyam, although it may not necessarily be priyam. So as previously said, in public you speak priyam, but when you're speaking amongst devotees, then you only speak the satyam, even if people don't like it. I hope you will understand the whole situation. If you still have any doubts, I shall be glad to hear from you and shall try to satisfy you to the best of my ability. I am presently not in very good health. Nonetheless, I hope this meets you well. Prabhupada was not happy that the editors of the BTG had printed a controversial topic, and he said that they should be more careful. He said that they should be more discreet in what they publish and not disturb people who were friends of ISKCON. He explained that many of our life members in Bombay are followers also of Vallabhacharya. And in fact, what happened was that some of the followers of Vallabhacharya launched a big campaign, the ones that were our life members, and they wrote to all of our life members, you know, saying that now they're insulting, these ISKCON people are insulting our Acharya, so you should immediately send back your life membership cards. And many of them did, actually. It was a big problem for us. And Prabhupada also received several very insulting letters from a couple of the leaders of the Vallabhacharya sect there in Bombay. And when we were in Hyderabad in December of 76, so like a couple of months later, then one letter came from this man. He was one of the main pujaris of the Pushtimag Vallabhacharyas. And he sent this letter to Srila Prabhupada, and it was so insulting that we couldn't read it to Prabhupada. It was really, really horrible. I mean, really nasty and insulting Prabhupada personally. And I had just, myself, I was reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and I just read about, you know, this whole episode where Ramachandra Khan insulted Nityananda Prabhu when Nityananda Prabhu came to his village and had sat down in a sitting place. Then when he left, this Ramachandra Khan had come and he had smeared the whole area with cow dung to purify it, because he was feeling that it had been contaminated by Nityananda Prabhu's presence there. And then it's described that 3 days later, the tax officials came in and they devastated the whole village, and all of Ramachandra Khan's possessions were taken away from him by the tax authorities, and he was ruined. And that was because of his insulting Lord Nityananda. So I just read that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Then we got this letter, And I was thinking, how can this person insult the pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada and get away with this? You know, something's got to happen to this guy. And then a few days later, we saw in the newspaper, not that we were reading the newspapers every day, but somehow or another, one was floating around there at the farm. And I read in the newspaper how the tax officials had raided this pujari from the Vallabhacharya sect, and they had discovered lakhs and lakhs of rupees of gold and silver and jewels secreted away in his flat, and that they had confiscated everything and all of his possessions. And it was the same guy. His name was given, and it was the same guy that had written this letter. Srila Prabhupada ki time. So, that was another exchange. One final comment on that. So that was beginning of August when Prabhupada got this letter. So then on August the 28th, when we were back in India and in New Delhi, Srila Prabhupada got a letter from Jagannath Sutadas, who was the editor-in-chief for Bhakti Godhead at that time. So he sent a letter with 10 copies of the latest issue, volume 11, number 9. He expressed his desire to be allowed to continue assisting His Divine Grace in pushing on Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. Prabhupada was pleased to receive the magazine and humbly replied, "Actually, I am dependent on your mercy. If you kindly follow my instructions and continue to push on Krishna consciousness, that this will make me very happy. You must very strictly observe the regulative principles and chant 16 rounds a day, and Krishna will give you guidance. That is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. To those who worship Him with love, Krishna gives the guidance so that they can come to Him. The more you give service to Krishna, the more you become advanced. Yasya deve para bhaktiya yata deve tata guru tataiti katita hiyata prakashante mahatmana. Only to those great souls who simultaneously have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of the Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. This is the secret of success." And then Prabhupada added a note about Sumati Murarji's recent complaint. "By the way, there has been some disturbance created by the publishing of a few comments on Vallabhacharya in Back to Godhead, Volume 10, Number 8, Page 5, Column 3, Paragraph 2. Kindly avoid comments such as these in future publications." So I think we should finish there. We were supposed to read a few offerings from the Gurus and GBCs. I hope you've enjoyed hearing a little bit about Prabhupada's writing. This evening, again, we're going to continue with this. So, okay, let's go on with the next part of the program. Srila Prabhupada ki.